Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Good evening and welcome to a very special edition of the Scuttlebutt Radio Network. Tonight, Tom talks with Bubba Jackson in a previously recorded interview, plus a very special tirade about Memorial Day. And now, Tom Claxton.
We at the Scuttlebutt Network have the extreme pleasure of being able to be extreme friends through the Marine Corps League with some of our older Marines in the area here. And we wanted to get a little bit of information on record here of our good buddy Horace T. Bubba Jackson. Bubba, you were in World War II as well as the Korean War. Give us a little bit of insight about when you went in and... And later on, you know, I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the things that happened to you during the holidays that we're fixing to get involved in locally here now at this day and time.
Okay, let me give you a little background. I spent my senior year in high school at Marion Military Institute, which I'm very proud of and was very fortunate to be able to go there. It's a prep school for academies and one thing or another, but I got a lot out of that. That was in June of 1945. I went up to summer school, and the war ended in August. While I was there, but I wanted to get in the Marines. My brother joined in the Marines back in 40. He finished Marion in 44, and I actually wanted to go. I went down to the recruiting station with him and brought my papers home, too. My mother wouldn't, Daddy wouldn't sign mine, but they said, you finish high school and we'll sign your papers. I was just 17, and he was, too. And so I did that, but enjoyed my time at Marion, got a lot out of it. And as soon as I graduated in May of 46, I went to see my recruiter down in Mobile. He used to be in the old federal building right there at St. Louis and St. Joseph Street, and signed up, was all excited about going. And about a day later, I got word from my brother that he was coming home. He was a seagoing Marine. He was on the Lexington, an aircraft carrier, referred to as a seagoing Marine. And I hadn't seen him in about 2 years, and so I went back and I told the sergeant down there that my brother was just coming home very shortly, and I sure would like to see him. I was probably leaving probably a week, give me time to get my things together, everything. But he said, well, that's all right. We got L&N trains leave here every morning going to Birmingham, so that's where I did that. And so I didn't leave until August. Got up to, I joined in Birmingham. We signed my papers up there in August the 5th of 46. And the war didn't officially end until December the 31st, 45. It lasted that long, so I got the GI Bill, the World War II GI Bill first. Went through boot camp at Parris Island. Good experience. Having that year at Marion really helped me, too. I was way ahead of most of the guys, but enjoyed that. And I thought I was going to Camp Lejeune, where most Marines take the advanced training that go through Parris Island. But no, not us. They were trying to get us overseas to relieve those fellas that had been over there 1 to 3 years. You know, some of them been over there a long time. And so I didn't go to. So they told me I'd get my advanced training overseas, so I did that. Took off, went to China, and we landed at Tientsin, China. That's North China. That's not too far from Peking, but we call it Peking. It's Beijing now. But spent about 6 months there, and they assigned me to a guard company. And so I was also in the engineers, first basic company, first engineer battalion, first Marine division, which was very fortunate because that's what I wanted to study at school, engineering. So that was my duty there, stand and watch, and we'll talk about that Christmas. It was up cold up there, too, but they took all the new guys and put us on guard duty, and it was boring, very, very boring. But anyway, about 6 months after that, we transferred down to Tsingtao, China. That's not too far. That's a seaport on the China Sea there. But the communists were moving in from the north, coming on down, so they pulled us out, got down there, and we got a replacement in. And so they asked us what we wanted to do. Well, I didn't want any more guard duty, and so I kept seeing those dump trucks running in and out of the compound and going all over the place. And by then, I was 18 years old, and I said, I want to be a dump truck driver. I thought that would be great. And so I qualified for that since I'd been driving since I was 14. I just had to learn how to double clutch that big old, it was a big GMC.
Right.
And did well at that. But again, I must have spent about 6 months there, something like that. I can't remember exactly. But there was an opening in mapping and reproduction. And that's a unit of the engineers that do all the maps, drawing and everything. And they needed the chief draftsman was being transferred home. He was finally getting to go home. And he is a staff sergeant. I was a PFC. I'd gotten promoted to PFC back in January of, must have been 47.
Okay.
But anyway, I applied, went down with several others. We applied for that, and I'd always loved to draw. I'd freehand drawing, mechanical drawing. I'd gone to Murphy for 3 years, Murphy High School, and taking all the mechanical drawing they had, and I was way ahead. Even when I got to Marion, the college drafting they had up there was nothing to me. So I didn't even bother taking that. But I took the test and was assigned chief draftsman of that detachment up there, the mapping reproduction. My skipper called me in, the commander, the company command, and he should have been a captain. He was the first lieutenant. And he said, I can't even give you another stripe, make you cough up, because they'd cut the Marine Corps back terrible financially. You know, everything was cut back. But the Marine Corps really got it. So I said, that's all right, Lieutenant. I'm happy where I am. I've got clean khakis and office hours, not getting me up all during the night. And so
right.
I'm happy to tickle to death to be where I am. And I did that, enjoyed that so much. And one thing I'll mention this, and it was kind of a highlight of my China duty. I'd cleaned out the squad bay, and everything was clear. All the other guys had left the building for some reason or other, but I was there by myself. And like I said, I did freehand drawing, pen and inks, and I was doing a drawing and a pen and ink of the general's headquarters. And we were built it in the old Bismarck Barracks, which were built back in World War One by the Germans. It was a beautiful building, stone building, had a parapet around the top and so forth. It had his flag, his brigadier general, had the one star out there. And I was working on that, and I had a sensation that something was wrong. I felt somebody was looking near me. And I turned around, it was General Thomas, division general. And he had come in the building. I didn't hear him come in. I was sitting up at the drawing board. And I jumped off that stool and said, good morning, General. Can I help you with something? And he said, well, I was just looking what you were doing. You're drawing now. And he said, we need something for Christmas. We need Christmas cards. And, you know, they always have a menu on one side and a place you can write to your sweetheart or your parents on the other side. And he asked me if they could use that. And I said, I would be delighted. And so my drawing at 18-year-old went out to probably 20,000 is the whole 1st Division was located up there.
That's unbelievable. Yeah.
At that time. That was quite an honor for me.
Well, what did y'all, hey, Bubba, did y'all have Christmas dinner there? I mean, you got all the turkey and dressings?
Yeah, we had a barracks. We had Christmas, and it was not barracks, I say, a mess hall. Each battalion had their own mess hall. So we were fixed up, had a nice dinner there, and like I said, China duty was wonderful duty. I just really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the Chinese people. I worked with them, and they were very conscientious and hardworking, and it's just a pleasure. My China duty was special, and that's to all Marines that was noted as good duty, because
things
were so cheap. Man, everything was cheap until the Navy would come to town, and they'd get the prices up some, and we'd give them a fit. We'd just tell them, no, we're Marines. We don't pay that much.
There you go.
Rickshaw ride or whatever it was. But, like I say, it was just great duty.
Well, and so the time that you spent up there, though, in that particular first Christmas, you did have a decent Christmas.
I had a wonderful Christmas. We had turkey, cranberry sauce, and dressing, the whole works.
All right. Bubba, it's a pleasure of having you on here. Can you hold on for another break, for a little bit longer? We're going to go to another break?
Sure, I can. Uh-huh.
All right, Bubba.
I hit a lick against what's wrong, or say a word for what's right, even though you get walloped for saying that word. Now, I may sound like a Bible beater yelling up a revival at a river crossing camp meeting, but that don't change the truth none. There's right and there's wrong. You gotta do one or the other. You do the one and you're living. You do the other and you may be walking around, but you're dead as a beaver hat.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
We're back with Bubba Jackson. We're going to get some more of his stories. Let's change the subject now.
All right. Okay.
And then after you got back home, I understand that you went to college.
Yes, I went to Auburn on the GI Bill and in the School of Architecture, and I was what they call building science. Now we call it building construction, but it trained you to be a contractor, and enjoyed that, and came home my second year. I wasn't quite a full sophomore, and that was in May. I got back to Mobile, and I was working in an apartment building here in Mobile. Creighton Towers, and I was on the second deck. I was a junior engineer shooting grades and one thing another, and enjoying my work. And I was eating lunch one day, sitting out in a little 35 Ford coupe I had, and they said, all former Marines come over to Pencil Island. We're forming a reserve unit. They even said this on the ad, too. Said, we've got free beer and shrimp for you. they had kegs of beer over there for us. And, you know, they wouldn't dare. If they did it, they wouldn't admit it now. But we went over there one Saturday and signed up. I called about three or four of my old-time Marine buddies to go over there, and we all did, and signed up for an indefinite enlistment.
Indefinite?
This was in May of 50. And the war started in Korea in June of 50, June 24th. And they activated us because we were Amtraks, which I had never been on an Amtrak. That's
right.
An amphibious weapon, equipment that take troops ashore. And so they, but we were activated. That was great with us. We were all excited. We said, ready to go. And so away we go. Most of us were World War II veterans, but we had about 12 kids that had just finished high school, and they joined the reserves. Well, when we got to Camp Pendleton, they sent them up to San Diego for boot camp. And I got to run into one or two of them about 6 or 8 months later overseas. I remember seeing them. But anyway, went to China, made the Incheon landing. That was September the 15th.
That's Korea, you mean?
Yeah. Well, okay. It's in Korea, and that was in South Korea. They discussed that landing quite a bit. The tide is about 26 foot, and you had to hit it just right.
Yeah.
Or wouldn't get stranded up there.
I was going to ask you about.
Been in terrible shape.
I was going to ask you if you had gotten involved in one of those tides over there. I understood they were over 20 feet.
Yeah, 26 feet. Now, I went in at high tide, so I didn't get. But I was okay. And by the time I got in, I didn't have any problems at all.
Hmm.
You know, I went right ashore. But while I was on the ship, they were bringing the wounded out to our ship, you know, to put on board. And they had other ships that were taking them too. But we didn't lose a lot of people, but we did lose some at Incheon. And then we went on to take Seoul, and it took us maybe less than 2 weeks, I think, before we even got to Seoul and took that. And they took the Marines out. We backed out and went around the peninsula to North Korea. What we'd done, see, the North Koreans had us trapped down at the what they call at the bottom of the peninsula, the perimeter, and they'd come right and just overrun the army that had come out of, they got them out of Japan, and they really weren't trained for that. And one thing I'll say about our Corps, they trained us always.
Right.
We were training on that ship even coming
right.
over.
Right.
And so when we hit Incheon, which was up north, that relieved the pressure from those people down south, and the North Koreans started evacuating, pulling north again. The Marines were down there. The 5th Marines were down there. They pulled them out of Okinawa, I think, and had a brigade, what it was. And they held that thing together down there until we hit Incheon. And so we had them on the move, and so they pulled us out, and we went around and hit Wonsan, which was another seaport in North Korea. But it had been mined, so we weren't going. Our general wasn't about to go through that mine until they got it cleaned out. So they had some minesweepers up there, and they got it cleaned out, and we went on in. So no action there, just it was an amphibious landing, but we didn't have any problem at all. And then I was sent down to Kojo, which was south, where the 1st Marines had gotten in trouble down there. That was Chester Fuller's outfit, and so I was detached to them. Now, what happened, being a truck driver, when I got out to California, I asked him who would I see about going to OCS? Because I had 2 years, almost 2 years of college, and during World War II, if you had that much, they'd usually hold you over. But that old gunny cussed me out and told me, and I was just PFC. I was, you know, it's just like a boot to him.
Right.
And he said, I got your number right here. And they had our record books and everything. They knew what we could do.
Right.
And at, being a dump truck driver, they signed into the motor transport where I didn't drive a dump truck, but I drove a 6x6, 2.5-ton truck, hauled troops, ammunition, food, whatever we needed, we'd haul it. And we would detach to different units, different regiments and all. But, so I went down there with them for a while. And when I came back to my outfit, which we was stationed out right outside of, we were still south of the reservoir. I'm trying to think. I can't remember the name of the
Chosen?
Town. But anyway, they were issuing one of those. This started getting cold.
When did you guys go to Chosen?
All right, we went up there in November.
Okay.
And this was it, during November, and they started picking up. They're picking up prisoners. They had some Chinese in there, you know. But they thought it was just a small group. The intelligence wasn't too good. That place was loaded with Chinese, but they'd slip in at night up and, across the Yalu, up above, you know, in North Korea and Manchuria. And so we didn't realize there's that many. And I hauled troops. I remember hauling the 7th Marine Regiment up to Udamni. That's the furthest north we went. And we let them off there, and I headed on back. And I think they got in trouble just a day or two later. The Chinese hit them in big time, and they got cut off up there. And that's when General Ray Davis, he was colonel then, and I was fortunate enough to get to meet him, he and his wife, and this was with the Marine Corps League when they
right.
christened the Chosen, the USS Chosen, the destroyers, one of these special destroyers they built down in Pascagoula.
Right.
We went over for that, the league did, all in uniform, and we met, that's where Ray Davis was, and he gave up his saber. He gave that to the, where they could put it in the officer's mess or somewhere. I don't know where they put it, in one of the main orders, though, but I thought that was quite admirable. He's just a wonderful person, and he finished at Georgia Tech and served in World War II, and his wife had gone to Agnes Scott, and she was just quite a lady. And my wife and I, we drove him back to a reception we had here in Mobile for him, too.
Right.
And so that was a lot of fun, getting the... here I am. I was corporal then. I got promoted to corporal when I came down off the mountain.
There you go.
Came down off the reservoir.
But he came down. That's from Chosen?
Right.
Yeah.
When I came down there.
Well,
people, and they promoted 3 corporals and 2 sergeants.
Damn, you're lucky.
They got me as one of the corporals.
There
I was
you go.
To death
well, you
that.
Deserved it. You deserved it. You should have been an officer. But
no,
now,
I wasn't graduated. I hadn't even finished my second year.
That's okay. Yeah. You know, they made a lot
finish.
Of...
I went...
They made a lot of field promotions while during that period
you know,
of time, too.
That was a
too.
Field promotion, but anyway, that was I enjoyed that and spent my time over there. And one other interesting story that I never will forget this because it meant so much to me. As you know, I'm Roman Catholic, and my faith has always meant so much to me. And it really got stronger and stronger, even in my China, because I had a good friend that was a good Methodist, and he was always asking me questions about the Catholic Church, and you know, because he was curious. And if I didn't know the answer, I'd go talk to my chaplain. We had a wonderful chaplain over there. We were hauling refugees out of North Korea. This was before we got to Chosen, but it was south of Chosen. North Koreans that wanted to be evacuated, they wanted to get back down south. They wanted to get out of North Korea because it's communist. And I had, it was a family. It was a mother and a father and about a little 6 or 7-year-old girl, as I remember. She was very small. And then maybe 2 other children with them. And she was quivering. She was just shaking all over. And I couldn't handle that. And so I took my field jacket off and gave it to her, put it on her. And reason that she was small, it touched the ground. You know, when the field jacket doesn't come all the way, it doesn't jump to your knees or anything. So,
right.
And I was warm enough. I had sweaters. I had all my clothes on. I had plenty of clothes. But and so, in a little while, we were still standing around waiting to load up. Maybe it was when we were getting ready to load up. And she had her hands in her pockets, and she found my rosary and a little prayer book in my pocket, and she picked it up and held it up to her mother, and they were Catholic, too. And they both, I get a little...
That's okay, Bob.
...choked up when I talk about this.
I understand.
We were just so happy to see one another, and we were hugging one another and anything. We took them down and had to drop them off. And unfortunately, they thought I'd given her that jacket, but I had to have my... You know, Marines, they keep their equipment. If you don't lose
right.
that, you'll
oh,
be
yeah.
in trouble.
Yeah.
And so I had to take it away, and I felt real bad about it, but often think about that little tot, and I wonder what she's doing. I hope she's doing wonderful. But that was just meant so much to me to run into somebody like that. And they were probably from missionaries way back that joined the church that families had or something. Right. But that was something that stands out. And I forget some of the other things. And God's given me the grace to forget some of the other things that I've seen and done. But I remember things like that. And so
what is your age?
And also,
what is your age now, Bubba?
But when I was in Kobe, Japan, combat loading, I wrote my wife, well, my sweetheart in Auburn that I'd met, and asked her to marry me when I come back. And she was in a freshman year when I first met her, and she was in a sophomore year now. She's starting a sophomore year. By then, she's finished up a sophomore, and very, very bright, and so. Let's see, where am I now? Let's see. And anyway, yeah, that was the one other thing that I always remember, being engaged over there by mail. But so she kept me alive, and that's another thing. You know, I was young. I turned 22 on the way over in the middle of the Pacific. And I did get two. Let's see. No, I was going to China. I got two Thanksgivings. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we went past the international date line, you know, and we had another turkey and cranberry the next day, too. But anyway.
Yeah. All right.
All right, let's see. Well,
we're gonna have to get out of here,
we're
Bubba.
We're on the way to the Chosen, and we did. I made it up there, and that's when we found out. I didn't realize at that time I was still a PFC. I didn't realize what was going on. I knew it was a heck of a firefight, you know, because we were on alert 100% of the time. We were surrounded by 10 Chinese divisions, and their intent was to annihilate the 1st Marine Division. We captured a few, and one thing that helped me, my China duty, and I'm not real good at it, but wanja dao itiao changwa, understand little Chinese. But I could speak Chinese or Mandarin at that time, much better than I do now. That's been 70-odd years ago. But so I didn't get too much out of them. You know, we're trying to get how many G-chunks, automatic weapons they had, and things like that. But that's another thing that I do remember, talking to some of those prisoners. And
hey, Bubba.
Yeah.
I appreciate all your time. I appreciate all your stories. You're an awesome individual and a great veteran. What is your age now, Bubba?
I'm 92. I'm 92, and I'll be 93 in August.
93 in this coming August? Okay.
Uh-huh. So I'm and my sweet wife, this is my second wife. I lost my first one, and she's just 65, and she's 90, Mary Jane.
Oh, yeah.
That great cook.
Hey, she's a precious lady, and she can cook some groceries.
She's 91 in February.
Well, we appreciate you. We appreciate you taking the time. And Bubba Jackson is a past commandant of the P.O. Wilson Detachment of Marine Corps League. And we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and move forward.
Nothing like the Marines, and I'm once a Marine, always one. As well as you know.
Hoorah!
And I've just had a wonderful life. All my life has been blessed.
Have a great day, brother.
We'll catch you later, then. Okay.
Hit a lick against what's wrong, or say a word for what's right, even though you get walloped for saying that word. Now, I may sound like a Bible beater yelling up a revival at a river crossing camp meeting, but that don't change the truth none. There's right and there's wrong. You gotta do one or the other. You do the one and you're living. You do the other and you may be walking around, but you're dead as a beaver hat.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us today on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans. Transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. I'm Cal Walters, along with Tom Claxton. We're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today.
And we certainly want to thank all the fine folks that continue to help make this show possible. The battleship, USS Alabama Memorial Park, our sea lawyer, Colin Kimberly, and all the fine folks at the law firm of Gordberg and Kimberly, the New Ed Seafood Shed on top of the hill in Spanish Fork, Viva Medicare of Alabama, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens.
And hey, before we jump back into the conversation with Brooke, I think you mentioned it, but I do want to reinforce that the Armed Forces Day event this Saturday, due to the possibility of inclement weather, it's going to be held in the airplane pavilion. Isn't that right?
Right. Tom? That's correct. And yeah, we're going to get there around 9:30, and the event will crank it at 10 o'clock sharp.
Good. Yeah. All right, yeah, I just wanted to make sure I saw that notice, you don't want to play around with some of the storms that we've been having with all the lightning being out there at the battleship park out in the open.
So. Right, that is so true. Lou was able to check that out and made the final decision this morning. I think that he wasn't going to take a chance on it, and so they went ahead and moved it inside the pavilion.
Great. And of course, that event is open to the public as well.
Yes, it is open to the public.
Yep. And everybody can roll out of there and head over to Ed's.
There you go. Once you leave there, we'll head over to Ed's and check this ward out for Brother Horace Bubba Jackson here, and from a 96-year-old Marine, World War II China Marine, and a chosen Reservoir Marine.
There you go.
He's done both of them. He's bad.
Well, I was about to say, talk about, living history.
Yes.
Right here in Mobile.
I sit and listen to him, and I just sit there, I have to get me a towel, because I sit there and cry, man, listen to all the stuff that he went through and things that happened to him, but it's unbelievable. Looking forward to seeing him get his award tomorrow.
That is remarkable. Well, on Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday, my bad.
Yeah. There you go. But, hey, again, we are chatting with Ms. Ashley Brooke Thomas, I guess.
Ashley and Brooke Thomas.
I can say, I can say that because I go by my middle name as well. I got the curse of being a junior.
Yes, yes.
But from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, Brooke, thank you again for all that you do and your team there at Gardberg do for our veterans.
Well, thanks.
Yep.
And, I kind of, before the break, we were talking about those claim sharks, and I thought I would talk about some of the other sort of substantive issues we're seeing a good bit of, too, in our practice. And we're seeing VA starting to schedule a lot of predetermination hearings, they call them, and informal conferences. And those are things where they're not the hearings, the big hearings in front of the judges, but they're just informal conferences with folks who work at the VA. And they come up usually one of two ways. If VA is going to try to reduce your benefits, they got to send you a letter that says, hey, we've looked at your file. We think that your foot is better, and we're going to reduce it. We're proposing to reduce it. They give you 30 days to ask for one of these informal predetermination hearings.
Where do we find that?
They'll send a letter.
Yeah, but how are we going to do that?
It doesn't have to be on any specific form from the VA. Usually do them on statements in support of claim. We'll just send something quickly back up there that says, hey, we got your proposal. We don't think it's better. We want a hearing on that. And it'll kind of pause things. They won't reduce your check while you're waiting for that hearing. They really won't do anything. Kind of puts a pin in it. But then they'll schedule this hearing, and they'll usually do them by Teams, Microsoft Teams they use a lot of. And we will talk folks through about what to expect. We'll get their medical records. Look at what VA is looking at. Why do they think that it's better? What do they think has changed? And then we have rooms set up in our office that are dedicated to virtual hearings, whether it's board hearings. We do Social Security hearings in there.
Okay.
We do these VA informal hearings, and we've just been seeing them reach out and schedule a lot more of those.
Okay.
Sometimes on appeals, when we do higher level reviews, they'll schedule them as well and just ask, hey, what's your argument on this? Why are you appealing this? Like, what's your position? We submit written argument, but they do also sometimes do informal conferences on those, and those can be done by phone.
Well, used to, you'd have to go to Birmingham or,
Montgomery
or somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Jackson, if you were, down here. And that's a haul.
It is.
To get to that regional office, especially for our panhandle vets. Back when I first started doing this, you had to go to St. Petersburg.
Oh, my Lord.
For some of this stuff.
Yeah.
That's a haul down there if you live in Pensacola.
So I know that y'all have bought an additional building, and you've converted some of those rooms to these special viewing rooms.
We dedicate that those rooms for that, and that's all those rooms are there for. It's in a suite by itself. They have acoustic tiles in there. They have large TV screens. So now you don't have to drive, you know, two and a half hours to go and essentially do the same thing, talk to a person over a TV screen. It's kind of silly. So that is one silver lining that COVID brought about, is that everybody fast-forwarded to that virtual, you know, setup.
So if y'all are taking care of the VAs or the veterans' claims, then that's part of your deal?
It's part of what we do. I mean, it's rare that I've seen one where we didn't challenge it.
Right.
Because usually VA doesn't apply their own laws correctly when they try to reduce somebody's benefit.
Well, you got to realize that some clerk up there decided, well, let's cut this guy's benefits, you know?
Right.
Maybe his foot's healed now. He's able to get around.
You know, one bad CMP. But the truth is...
What is that?
Oh, at this compensation and pension exam.
Okay.
That they, where
CMP.
They send you out. They're all done those by those contractors now. So if you've had one recently, they used to do them in-house, but for the last several years, they do them. They send them out to these contractors, and you get one bad one. But the truth is, if you got real bad arthritis in your knee... It's probably not going to get better.
It's not going to get better, no.
So we like to challenge those and make VA justify why they're trying to reduce benefits.
All right.
And the other topic I just wanted to bring to your attention is we've had a few questions about this, about particularly widows and widowers' claims,
right? Yes.
There are lots of rules about who is a qualifying widow, how long your marriage had to be. And one of the biggest ways that you qualify, or I'll say biggest, but most common ways folks will qualify for benefits, if you have a veteran who passes away and the cause of death is something that's service connected, then their widow, assuming they were married long enough, can collect a benefit. Now, it's not that veteran's check. It's a separate benefit.
Right
now, it's about $1,600.
Yeah. It can be up to 16.
Up to 1600. Sometimes it can go up a little bit, depending on how long the veteran was rated 100% or if they were. But a lot of people call and they ask, and there are veterans who never filed a claim.
Okay.
Or perhaps never got a chance to file a claim because they passed away of something that's listed in the PACT Act.
Okay.
So then their question becomes, well, you know, my wife or my husband never filed for those benefits. They never filed for that lung cancer.
Can they do that now? What?
They can't file for them, but you can still file for those widow's benefits.
Okay.
And just show and make the argument, well, they never filed for it while they were living, but it's something that we know now is related to those burn pits.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So they don't have to have been service connected for it while they were living, especially if it's something presumptive.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Then they need to just get in touch with Gardberg and Kimberly.
So you can reach us online at GardbergLaw.com. You can call us here locally in Mobile, 251-343-1111. And through our website, you can see our bios of all our attorneys. You can email us. So lots of ways to reach out. And our office, like I said, we have a physical office here in Mobile. And we're, you know, happy to be local.
And if they
want
to check out to see if you guys are certified, they could go to
They can go to the VA's Office of General Counsel's website.
Okay.
Yep.
That's that va.gov?
It's part of va.gov. I'm bad. I'll go to Google. OGC accreditation. It pulls it right up.
Okay.
And then you type our names in.
What kind of accreditation?
VA is the Office of General Counsel, OGC. They can look us up. We're all accredited, I promise.
Okay. All right. Well, and that one of the reasons we appreciate you guys working with us, is we'd like to promote the fact that you are certified VA attorneys. And you can always go to scuttlebuttnetwork.com for more information. And on the other side of the break, you'll get my tirade.
Necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
Memorial Day, as we know it today, can trace its roots back to 1966 and President Lyndon Johnson, when he declared Waterloo, New York, the official birthplace of Memorial Day. However, history tells us the day was originally known as Decoration Day and was first observed on May the 30th, 1868, after the war between the states. A proclamation by General John A. Logan declared, "The 30th of May, 1868, is designed for the purposes of strewing with flowers or otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who died in defense of our country." With the memory of a devastating war fresh in the nation's memory, that first Memorial Day saw more than 5,000 participants help to decorate the graves of over 20,000 Union and Confederate soldiers at Arlington National Cemetery. However, as a nation with a short memory, it was not long before the importance of observing Memorial Day began to wane in the minds of those in a post-war world. In 1884, Oliver Wendell Holmes, in a Memorial Day address to the Grand Army of the Republic, notes the queries of the youth of his day as to why people continue to keep up the observance of Memorial Day. Justice Holmes' response was simple. "Memorial Day is still kept so that we may answer that it celebrates and solemnly affirms from year to year a national act of enthusiasm and faith. We can hardly share the emotions that make this day to us the most sacred day of the year, and embody them in ceremonial pomp, without, in some degree, imparting them to those who come after us. This weekend, over 100 years later, throughout our nation, citizens will gather together as they have for generations to once again enthusiastically affirm our faith with the over 1 million soldiers." That's 1 million, guys. 1 million soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen who have gone before us, given their lives in defense of our great nation. The simple phrase, "Freedom is not free," is a fitting and permanent epitaph for each of these heroes. And it is their legacy, their undying gift to us, that today we continue to live as the land of the free. There is a story that during World War II, a couple of U.S. soldiers were patrolling an area that had been heavily shelled during a battle the previous day. They passed by the ruins of a severely damaged cathedral, where little was intact aside from a statue of Jesus Christ with his arms outstretched. The soldiers were able to upright the statue and place it on the steps of the church, and after much searching, though they were unable to find the hands to complete the statue, and so before they moved on to their next post, they left a sign which simply read, "He has no hands now but yours." This is the legacy that has been left to us by our fallen brothers and sisters, those who have fought the good fight and given the full measure. It is one that rightly deserves our continued remembrance, but it is also one that demands our enduring action, lest their sacrifices be in vain. Their voices have fallen silent and their bodies are at rest. They have no hands now but ours. And so it is a proper and fitting tribute that we are the living remember our heroes, not only on this very special day, but that we do so each and every day, that we work to enrich the memories of those who have sacrificed and those who continue to sacrifice for our freedom. And while this is a mission of enormous proportion, it is one that is built upon the hard work and dedication of local individuals and groups who have answered the call. Furthermore, I believe that any observance of Memorial Day would not be complete without the remembrance of those who served their country with honor and courage, and who came home to tell about it. It is a right and decent thing that these brothers and sisters in arms receive the recognition and honor due them while they are still among us. And no group deserves this more than what we now call the greatest generation, our World War II veterans. For many who served in World War II, their service and sacrifice did not end over there. They returned home to work as policemen, firemen, factory workers, and foremen, doctors, and business owners. They continued to build this great nation through their service and advance the causes of their fellow veterans through their ongoing work. Sadly, we're now losing our remaining World War II veterans at an ever-increasing pace. For many of us, Memorial Day conjures up images of our national cemeteries with row upon row of graves, each decorated with its own personal U.S. flag. These images harken back to the very origins of this day, and yet they will come alive to us today as we enter our second decade of the War on Terror. The philosopher and statesman Edmund Burke once said, "All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." It is my hope that as a nation, we will come to recognize that we do not take lightly the specter of war, nor do we hastily send our finest to fight for freedom, both our own and that of others. I firmly believe that ours is a cause that is just, and that the service men and women who have answered the call of their nation since 9/11 have earned the moniker of this century's greatest generation. And while Memorial Day is a day of national remembrance, you can see that it is firmly built on the sacrifices of loved ones lost in our own communities and the hard work and dedication of the local veterans and volunteers who keep these memories alive. Remember, no one can do everything, but everyone can do something. We the living have been given an incredible gift by those who have gone before us. But this gift might well be prefaced with the prologue, "To whom much has been given, much is expected." And so I encourage you to go forth today with fond memories of cherished loved ones and missing comrades, and dedicate yourself to be the hands and voices for those who have none, to carry forward the rich legacy which we have been given, and to make every day Memorial Day. May God bless each of you. May He bless our veterans and their families. And may He continue to bless the United States of America.
Christ was born of
Bless America. To the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Tom Claxton, Cal Walters, a couple old Marines with just a little bit to say, the First Amendment right to say it and the fighting spirit to keep it. And I'm, you know, Tom, we don't have a lot of time left in today's show. But, you know, I think we need to extend that definition of who we honor on Memorial Day.
Right. Sure.
To those who came back and have lost their lives by their own hands.
Oh, yes.
Because for whatever reason, they served honorably.
Yes.
And we've lost them.
Right.
And their service is no less important than those who died in the line of duty.
That is so true, brother. So true.
And you know, and it's difficult because there are those who want to say, well, you know, that's what Veterans Day is for. But I would just like to put out there that every day should be Memorial Day.
Right.
And those who lost their battle when they came back
right.
deserve to be recognized
right.
Every bit as much as those who made the ultimate sacrifice wherever they were
right.
during their service.
Well, they made the ultimate sacrifice after they got back, Cal. You know, because they saw so much and did so much.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, go out, remember those who have fallen so that we can live free. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hoorah!